Welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Times Security Podcast Series. My name is Ian Murphy. My guest today is Mark Thomas, Global Head of Threat Intelligence at NTT Limited. Today, we're going to be talking about NTT Limited's Global Threat Intelligence Report 2021 and some of the findings it contains. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Ian. Thanks for having me. I lead the Global Threat Intelligence for NTT Limited. Essentially, we're responsible for creating threat intelligence capabilities to empower our platform managed security services. That can include things like threat research, looking at different threat actors, the campaigns, the tactics, techniques, and procedures that are used by them, creating threat data feeds, as well as threat publications that we use for situational awareness.
This year's GCIR report is quite big. It's 68 pages with an awful lot of information in it. What are the key things for you?
There's quite a few key insights that we have, and we distill this by industry and region. The big takeaways this year is that there is a much more focused attacks on specific key industries, like finance, like healthcare, like manufacturing. Secondly, it's the changing face of malware, where we see the landscape continue to evolve, whether it be crypto miners to ransomware to worms and Trojans. Thirdly, given we're under a pandemic, there has been a shift to decentralized ways of working. That has meant that threat actors have started to target both the home user as well as the office user. And a lot of that is meaning that home routers and IoT devices have become more in focus of threat actors. It does spell a problem for the future, because I think the way that we're working today is the way that we'll continue to work in the future.
A couple of things jumped out to me. Let's talk about industries first. I was surprised to see that attacks against the IT industry itself have fallen quite a lot this year.
Correct. Last year, that technology sector was quite mature in their maturity posture, and I think that has led to a change in what threat actors are looking to target. But secondly, because of the pandemic, that's really shifted not only the way that people are working. There was hyper-focus on specific industries. They were always in the media, and that meant that threat actors took more of a preference to target specific industries, like I said, healthcare, manufacturing. There's more rewards to be had by targeting those industries because it's important to keep them available.
How much of a risk is there in manufacturing? Last year, we saw manufacturers shut down globally. As they start to come back online, is there a risk that we will have seen attacks against them that were unreported, that were unnoticed, where malware has been left waiting to be triggered?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is over 300% increase in manufacturing last year. That's the largest increase in volume that we've seen in any industry. Even from a security maturity perspective, we know that they're one of the weakest industries out there. They just simply don't have the security capability to defend against some of the more advanced threat actors out there. They still struggle when it comes to security vision and strategy, logical security architecture and controls, risk management frameworks, information security frameworks, and so forth. We have our cybersecurity advisory where we benchmark a client's profile, and we can see that they're challenged. Secondly, if we have a look at some of our insights from an application perspective, the average number of vulnerabilities per site, manufacturing has one of the highest rates of vulnerabilities. And that's at about 8 vulnerabilities per website. We know that they're challenged to be able to keep pace with patching applications. We know that their security maturity is low, but we're also seeing a significant volume of attacks targeting their infrastructure. It is very likely that in the coming years, as they uplift their security posture, that they'll detect even more threats that are currently on the network that may have yet to be discovered, simply because they don't have the right controls in place to detect.
One of the key shifts we see for manufacturing has been to move away from on-premises systems into the cloud. Is that likely to expose some of those threats quicker as they start to reinvent or revitalize their IT systems?
That's what we call the cloudification of assets. We're seeing that now with IoT devices as well, because they connect from the edge up until the cloud. In order to manage that infrastructure, it's often through mobile devices that are accessing applications in the cloud as well. Organizations still need to worry about how to secure that infrastructure securing the applications that are there. We're actually seeing a huge increase in attacks that are targeting both web applications as well as, you know, applications in general. And that accounts for about 67% of all the attacks that we see. And that's an increase of about 12% year on year. We are starting to see a lot more assets that are pushed into the cloud. And as a result, there are a lot more attacks that are targeting that infrastructure. It also leads to the point around getting visibility into assets. With digital transformation and migration to the cloud, organizations are simply struggling to understand what assets exist. It's application sprawl. Being able to appropriately manage your assets, get the visibility that you need to, and then of course being able to manage it to reduce the risk, that's really the challenge that these organizations face.
Asset sprawl isn't just about manufacturing. It also includes OT systems. We're starting to see much more attention being paid by bad actors to OT. Is OT asset management still where we were 3-4 years ago, where many IT departments had no visibility and didn't know what they were protecting?
What we have seen from a year-to-year perspective is that more organizations within the OT space have reached out to us, looking to uplift their security posture. Their maturity is still low. Even though the engagement is higher, which is a great thing because organizations within that industry understand that cybersecurity is really a strategic initiative and it needs to have the business buy-in. But they're still lacking when it comes to transforming that environment. It's going to be a number of years before we see them catch up to other industries like the technology sector, for example. I think that really lends credence to why threat actors are targeting the OT space. Not only is it critical infrastructure and it has a direct impact into countries, but there's also an amount of pressure that these organizations are facing to keep their systems up and running. Therefore, if there is, let's say, a ransomware attack, these types of organizations are likely to pay up because they need to keep their business in production.
Healthcare has moved up the chart continually over the last couple of years. Part of that is aging infrastructure, part of it a lack of resources. For attackers, it's also about the type of data. It means they can go after individuals and also pivot into finance, where they can then attack insurance. This year, of course, we've had COVID on top of that. How bad is the situation for healthcare?
Healthcare appears in the top three most attacked industries. It's 17% of all the attacks that we've seen. In last year's report, it was coming in about number six most targeted industry. And this year, obviously, at number three position, it's definitely become front of mind for threat actors to target. Secondly, when it comes to security maturity, it is actually one of the least mature industries that we look at. It only scores about 1.02 out of a scale of 6 on our security maturity index. We're seeing a lot of attacks. We're seeing a very immature security capability. The challenge here is for these organizations really to uplift that security transformation that they're on. It's going to take a number of years, and we've seen a lot of different compromises from various organizations within the healthcare and pharmaceutical sector. But again, this is definitely needing much more focus and investment in order to uplift that security posture.
Public infrastructure is generally underfunded around the world. Private healthcare, which runs alongside the public option and works in conjunction with it, has a much bigger budget. It also competes with public healthcare. Is there any part of the infrastructure from either public or private that you see doing a better job?
It all comes down to the data that each of these industries hold and process and store. You know, personally identifiable information, there are various regulations that have to be adhered to. It is going to be, you know, a challenge regardless whether it's public or private, but it's getting that investment to uplift the security posture. It's certainly not a problem that's going away. There needs to be much more engagement and support from government. In recent years, many insurance premiums are going up because they cite a lack of infrastructure in healthcare and a lack of security. If that investment flows through to the industry, then obviously that will drive more focus on the security posture.
A lot of the public focus this year has been around attacks against healthcare and ransomware. But the one thing I didn't expect to see in this report was the rise of crypto mining, and perhaps I should have done, given how much cryptocurrencies have soared over the last 18 months.
This was a huge surprise for us. Everyone's talking about cryptocurrency, which coin to invest in. Is it Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin? It's really taken off from the media perspective. What we didn't expect to see is all of the crypto mining software that's being deployed across clients. What it suggests is that, one, there's malware on the machine and then it has deployed additional payloads of crypto mining software, or two, there's a web page that someone has browsed to and it's just running silently in the background. The challenge is, do organizations have the visibility into crypto mining software? It represents a huge number of threats that we see per year. And in fact, accounted for about 41% of all malware that we detected in 2020.
If we go back a few years, one of the ways we detected crypto mining was the amount of resources that it consumed, the amount of electricity it ate through in an organization. As I understand it from Stefan Hendricks, that's no longer the case. It's getting much harder to spot those crypto miners.
Correct. In the early days, I guess you can call it crypto mining version one, it would take up a huge amount of CPU, very easy to detect. But what we're seeing with the evolution of crypto mining software is that it's able to detect keyboard activity or mouse movement, so it knows when you're physically present on your machine. If you are there, then it may sit silently in the background, only consume a very small amount of CPU. It may operate only at certain hours. So it's very unlikely that you'll be able to detect it. One of the other ways that potentially one can have a look at that is just resource usage of the electricity power bills. Is it going up in price? If it is, well, is it market driven or is there something else nefarious that we've identified that's running on the computer silently there? And that's going to be a challenge for organizations.
How much of the risk comes from the accidental or the deliberately malicious insider? The user at home who sees the rise of cryptocurrency and thinks, I want some of that, and downloads a crypto miner, not realizing that they're no longer in control of that miner once it's on their machine. There's also the individual who thinks, well, company servers aren't being used at the moment. I can just install this as an application into my workspace and leave it running all the time. Are you seeing many insider attacks at all?
If you have a look at the education industry as an example, XMRig, which is one of the famous cryptocurrency miners that we see, makes up about 62% of all malware detected that we see in that industry. That has continued to be prominent over the past few years, but it's getting worse. Crypto mining in general, a lot of people consider it low severity, but the question is, how did it get there in the first place? Was it through other types of malware that has deployed it? Was it a nefarious individual? Or was it someone who is just looking to reap the rewards of the cryptocurrency market that continues to surge in value every few weeks? I think it's more important to understand what the root cause was, how did it get there, and then being able to update and patch your system to remove it. Where developers out there who are looking to cash in, you've also got people within the organization looking to reap the rewards of that crypto mining software as well.
We've seen an increase in the number of multi-attacks in the last year. Attackers want to get a foothold on a machine and use that to add more malware over time. How much has crypto mining become a gateway attack?
Yeah, so good question. Over time, we've definitely seen that changing face of malware where it's become much more multifunctional and modular in nature. Specifically, what we're seeing is malware that's used in targeting different industries. So it really didn't matter which industry that we looked at, and even different regions. The malware that we find in a client is quite different. Attackers have their choice when they do target an organization, whether that's the technology sector or healthcare. That threat landscape when it comes to malware continues to evolve. We're definitely seeing variations. A lot more Trojan and remote access software is also coming to the fore. But in terms of crypto mining, it can be simply one payload as part of five or six, as you mentioned, and they could be controlled by different types of threat groups out there.
The use of malware as a service has seen a significant uptake over the last few years, and the benefits on offer for people have grown quite substantially. But we've also seen a lot of protectionism, where some of the more advanced malware operators have restricted heavily who they will engage with so that their malware isn't easily found and therefore can't be disassembled by defenders. Where do you see that market going? Is it the beginning of a growth stage, or is it becoming mature?
Both. It is definitely more mature than it was a few years ago. What we've seen recently is the rise of cybercrime as a service, which unfolds into ransomware as a service. More recently, we've seen this trend of ransomware affiliation programs, whereby cyber criminals are working together. they will operate the ransomware infrastructure, they'll code it, they'll put it into effect, but they'll then work with someone called the initial access teams. They can be any individuals who are very good at targeting select industries or companies. Once they find their way in, then they'll deploy that piece of ransomware and they'll share in the return of the profits. That's definitely a more evolved model than it was a few years ago, the whole idea of affiliation services. Not unlike how legitimate businesses work as well. We've seen ransomware in general evolve from being this traditional way of working where you set off a piece of malware within the organization to one that's more focused on data exfiltration and extortion. Also, we're seeing double extortion. If a company is not prepared to pay, they may go after your customers who they've managed to take the data from. There's been a lot more focus around that area. Also, big game hunting, where we've seen ransomware operators targeting based on the scope and scale. They're seeking to target high-value companies, and they deploy custom malware as a result of that. Adversaries are doing their threat research. They notice the size of the company and the revenues that they generate. That market is definitely becoming far more sophisticated.
How many of those attacks are lateral movements? E.g., they come into the supply chain at a lower level, they know where they want to get to, and they're willing to invest the time to get there. We've talked about this a lot over the last decade in this industry, about advanced persistent threats, and the length of time some of those chains take to get to the final target. But it does seem that we're seeing a lot more lateral movement and a lot more guile.
We're all connected. We're all part of a larger digital ecosystem. We all have a supply chain. There's an increasing dependence on technology as organizations go through digital transformation. We all have business partners and clients. That's one of the key reasons why we see a much more focus on supply chain attacks. Both hardware and software can be interfered with by threat actors. And the more you rely on the software or the hardware, the more at risk you may be. By targeting one company, you effectively can target all of the companies behind that as well. There has been much more focus recently given ransomware attacks, software vulnerabilities that have been out there. Often this is targeted not only by cyber criminals, but nation states as well. There's definitely a rising profile of victims out there related to these types of attacks.
One of the biggest shifts we saw last year was everybody working from home. For those of us who are used to working from home, we have systems, security, things we put in place over years in order to protect both ourselves and the organizations we work for. But the shift meant a lot of people scrambling to try and protect home computers because, quite frankly, for the last 4 years, bring your own device has been more about how do we not spend money that we don't have in IT rather than providing users with technology. How much did BYOD open up organizations to attack because they had no visibility into the technology end users were using?
Yeah, this is a huge challenge. The move to a more decentralized model has really made organizations think around their network and security architecture. This whole movement towards zero trust architectures where the user or the identity of the user becomes much more focused. How that user uses the device and the applications and the data behind that, and of course, accessing applications that might be in the cloud. We saw a large amount of embedded systems and routers targeted this year. We didn't see that in previous years' reports, but under the pandemic, there's been a lot more use of IoT devices and routers in general. That makes up a fair degree of attacks that we've seen. And it even covers the likes of digital video recorders and other Wi-Fi devices as well. They're all now connected. The second point to be concerned with is the insecurity of those devices, but the insecurity of home networks. As people are starting to work from home, they want to be able to access their workplace. They've enabled remote access, but they've done so in an insecure manner. What we've seen recently is various campaigns, both nation-state-driven and cyber-criminal-driven, targeting RDP systems that allows a foothold within the organization because they're unpatched, they haven't been patched for many years. There's a wealth of vulnerabilities out there that cyber-criminals can use to target that infrastructure and gain an initial foothold within the organization.
If a router was company-owned, we would monitor it, patch it, and look for vulnerabilities. The problem for telcos is they're supporting millions of users, many of whom don't want them pushing updates to their devices. More importantly, a lot of those customers go and buy their own devices from a local IT store, and the telco has no visibility. How do we improve the overall security posture of those devices?
It's about having standards in place, having regulations that get pushed to the manufacturers themselves, and ensuring some level of security from a telecommunications industry as well. Some of those could include security hygiene, making sure that a user has to change usernames and passwords as the device gets rolled out. Others might include a telco having the ability to detect botnet-related activity as it connects to the network and might communicate with other systems across the globe. As a telecommunications provider, we have visibility to see botnet and command and control activity. I think there could be some regulations in the future to better support both home users and organizations delivered as a service so that we can uplift home users as well as businesses.
We're now over a year from the start of this mass migration to working from home. We know it's going to be a core part of the way our employees work going forwards. How rapidly have organizations matured their security posture to protect their users and the business? And what is still missing in the way businesses are working?
Yeah, not fast enough. If we look at the benchmark score by industry year on year, some industries have improved, and some industries have only got worse. Digital transformation, new applications, being able to rapidly deploy your infrastructure remotely and being able to support that decentralized workforce, that's all been a challenge over the past 12 months. It makes sense that some industries have felt the brunt of that transformation, healthcare, manufacturing specifically, but other industries have already had to work in a decentralized way before, so it's not exactly new. We've seen education improve their maturity year on year, as well as business and professional services. But finance, manufacturing, and healthcare maturities have dropped. Having a look at the way we are working means that we have to look at investing in different types of technologies. The security model has changed fundamentally. There's much more focus on the user, on the identity. Zero trust architecture is an architecture that organizations need to think about in order to continuously validate that the user is getting access to the right resources at the right time and in the right means.
This year should see the delayed Olympics take place. In previous years, we've seen attacks start years before the event, when attackers have gone after the national sports bodies in different countries. They've also worked through groups that have won contracts to work with the Olympic delivery bodies. One of the things that Japan has done is spend a lot of money supporting the nearby nations and helping to improve its own infrastructure. Because the Olympics have been delayed by a year, it's given us more time to look at potential attacks and to prepare better. What have you seen? Because I know NTT does a lot of work in this space.
The Global Threat Intelligence Center is actually very focused around the Olympics. And it's not just protecting our clients in that space, but protecting NTT as well. And that goes to working with some of our key partners on the threats that they may be facing leading up to, during, and post the Olympics and Paralympics. We're already well aware that there are nation states and state-sponsored actors who have the motivation and the capability to target the Olympics, and those involved with supporting the Olympics from an infrastructure perspective. Cyber criminals are looking to scam people who are able to attend. We've also seen attacks that are looking specifically to target individuals associated with the Olympic Games, you know, spear phishing attacks, distributed denial of service attacks as well. NTT, along with the Global Threat Intelligence Center, we have to work with our partners in this space. There is no single security company in the world who knows everything. This really brings out the importance of public-private sector collaboration and information sharing. It's only through sharing across borders can we start to understand that the true magnitude of the threat landscape and how we can collaborate together to disrupt and potentially take down threat actors who are looking to undermine the Olympics.
Looking across the whole of the report, what were the three things for you that stood out that companies can begin to deal with today?
Firstly, I'd say malware, where we have seen a rise in crypto miners and Trojans. And of course, the backdrop of that, the evolution in ransomware as well. So focus should be on better endpoint protection. Second, with all of the recent vulnerabilities, as well as challenges associated with patch management, people working from home, they also have to patch those systems. Too many times we find that systems and assets in general are never updated regularly enough. So focus should be on updating software, vulnerability scanning, having some form of vulnerability assurance in place. Third would be protect public-facing applications. Again, much more transformations taking place, applications getting pushed to the cloud. That means that you still need to have security on the cloud itself. Investing in the right controls, be it within your mobile device, be it at the web application frameworks that you may be using, that will be critical. Undermining all of that is your ability to work with an outsourced provider to better support you from an incident detection to an incident response perspective so that you can reduce the scope and impact of a breach.
That's brilliant. Mark, thank you for talking with me this morning.
Thanks very much, Ian. I really appreciate it.